Hello and Happy New Year. This is Mary reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, January 6th, 2024. Starting out with the front page. Weather. First winter storm of 25 packs punch. By Tony Reed. Decatur. The new year didn't waste much time before hammering central Illinois with a snowy windstorm. The Decatur area appeared to be bearing the brunt of it, with the National Weather Service in Lincoln predicting between 7 and 12 inches Sunday through Monday morning, promising to make the commute to work hazardous. The grim picture didn't stop there, however. Winds that were expected to pick up Sunday evening were forecast to keep on blowing through 10 a.m. Monday. I would say gusts of 25 to 35 miles an hour, and there is about a 35% chance for gusts higher than 35 miles an hour as well. NWS meteorologist John Bumgarner, speaking Sunday, told the Herald and Review. Given the amount of snow already on the ground, Bumgarner said there was the potential for near whiteout conditions in some areas. As of 7 p.m. Sunday, the highest amount of snow observed in Macon County on the National Weather Service website was 6.4 inches in Mount Zion. The Macon County Courthouse and all county offices will be closed Monday because of the expected conditions, officials said Sunday. Millikan University and Richland Community College had also announced campus closures. Reports of area accidents trickled in on police scanner traffic in the Decatur area Sunday, although many motorists had clearly heeded warnings to stay off the roads unless absolutely necessary. The Decatur Airport reported visibility at times Sunday down to less than a quarter mile. Drivers are taking the winter weather advisory seriously, which is nice, said Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department. It's good advice to stay off the roads. The Illinois State Police said in a social media post at 5:15 p.m., however, that troopers were on the scene of a crash on Interstate 55 at milepost 124, leading to the closure of the northbound lanes Sunday evening in Logan County. Traffic was being diverted through Lincoln at milepost 123. About 63 million people in the U.S. were under some kind of winter weather advisory, watch, or warning on Sunday, according to the National Weather Service. The weather created dangerous travel conditions across parts of the Midwest, with neighboring Indiana activating the National Guard to help stranded motorists. Governors in Kentucky, Missouri, and Arkansas declared states of emergency. In central Illinois, the National Weather Service issued an urgent weather message early Sunday with a blanket winter storm warning that covered some 28 central Illinois counties and 30 towns stretching from Flora to Decatur, Mattoon, Charleston, Shelbyville, and Effingham. It warned of heavy snow up to 12 inches in some of those areas, compounded with a nasty mix of both sleet and freezing rain to make the roads even more treacherous. Travel could be very difficult, the warning said. Areas of blowing snow could significantly reduce visibility. The hazardous conditions will impact the Monday morning commute. Motorists who did venture out were warned to carry a flashlight, food, and water in their vehicle in case they get stranded and had to await rescue. Bumgarner said the snow in central Illinois will finally ease off as Monday morning wears on and leave bone-chilling cold in its wake. The high for Wednesday is forecast at just 17 degrees and will plunge to around 1 degree Wednesday night. And more snow could be lurking just around the corner. Some models are showing another system coming in and bringing at least some light snow to the area, maybe by late Thursday. Bumgarner added. Turning to page 2, One Killed, One Hospitalized in Inner Tube Accident by Scott Perry. Decatur. One juvenile was killed, and a second is undergoing treatment for life-threatening injuries after an ATV-pulled inner tube they were riding collided with a large boulder, authorities said Sunday. According to a Macon County Sheriff's Office news release, the inner tube was being pulled by a 4-passenger, all-terrain vehicle, side-by-side, where the incident occurred around noon Sunday in the area of Fort Daniel Road. The release said a 43-year-old male was driving the ATV that was pulling the inner tube, accompanied by 2 juvenile males. While turning around on a downhill slope, the inner tube slid out around the outside of the turn and collided with the boulder. The Mount Zion Fire Department and Abbott Ambulance arrived on scene to administer medical treatment and then transported both juveniles to Decatur Memorial Hospital, the release said. One juvenile male was pronounced deceased at Decatur Memorial Hospital. The other juvenile male was transported to St. John's Hospital in Springfield. An investigation is ongoing. State Police Honor Trooper Fatally Struck by Vehicle by Olivia Stevens of the Daily Southtown. Orland Park. Illinois State Police honored and helped lay to rest one of their own in Orland Park late last week. Hundreds attended the private funeral service of State Trooper Clay Carnes at Parkview Christian Church in Orland Park, as well as the previous night's visitation. A procession followed from the church to Holy Sepulchre Cemetery in Alsip for Carnes' interment. Today and every day going forward, we honor Illinois State Police Trooper Clay Carnes for his sacrifice and the sacrifice made by his family, State Police Director Brendan Kelly said in a news release Friday. Kelly spoke at Carnes' funeral, along with Lieutenant Colonel Jason Bradley, State Trooper Patrick Mano, and siblings Chad Carnes and Erica Raciak. Following the funeral, 3 rows of at least 20 law enforcement members honored Carnes in starting the procession in the Parkview Christian Church parking lot. Bagpipers played Amazing Grace and Going Home, and Chicago Police Department helicopters flew over the church. Mourners stood quiet and alert in the frigid cold until Carnes' casket was placed inside a black Cadillac SUV. Carnes, 35, was married to Megan Carnes and father to 2 children, ages 2 and 3. Task Force Recommends Placing Tornado Shelters in Warehouses by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A task force created in the wake of a deadly Metro East tornado has issued recommendations for better protecting warehouse workers. 6 people were killed when an EF3 tornado with 150-mile-per-hour winds struck an Amazon warehouse in Edwardsville in December of 2021. The incident raised questions about the safety of warehouses in severe weather, including if warehouses are even designed to withstand extreme winds, and if warehouse operators are properly prepared for severe weather. Illinois lawmakers established the Warehouse Safety Standards Task Force in January 2023 to study warehouse safety in response to the Edwardsville tornado, and it issued its final report last month. Among its recommendations was that building codes be amended to require tornado shelters in warehouses. The International Building Code became Illinois' statewide building code on January 1st, after being approved by the legislature in 2023. The task force recommended shelters be added to that code. The IBC doesn't have specific requirements for severe weather because threats vary around the world, Tim Schmitz from the International Code Council told the task force. However, communities can adopt their own codes specifically to meet the needs of natural disasters in their area. Providing the right shelter from tornadoes can save lives, Greg Bryant from the Masonry Structural Coalition told the task force. He pointed to a 2004 F4 tornado in Woodford County that destroyed a manufacturing plant, but all 140 people in the building made it out alive after taking refuge in a designated safe area of the building. The six people killed in Edwardsville were not in a safe area of the warehouse, Edwardsville police said after the tornado. The 2021 tornado hit around 8:30 p.m. as the facility was bustling ahead of the holidays. According to the National Weather Service, the tornado touched down near I-270 and the Illinois Route 255 southwest of the warehouse and traveled through the south half of the building. The tornado first impacted the west-facing wall, causing it to collapse. That caused other structural failures, including the roof, to collapse. The tornado was on the ground for just about 5 minutes, but debris from Amazon was found miles away from the warehouse after the tornado lifted. An OSHA investigation into Amazon did not find any violations, according to the task force report. OSHA recommended the company review its severe weather procedures, ensure employees are provided training, and participate in drills, have site-specific information about severe weather plans, and ensure audible warning devices are accessible. The warehouse was rebuilt and reopened in September 2024. The task force also recommended requiring site-specific emergency plans based on OSHA's guidelines for employers to prepare for tornadoes. The plans would be shared with local first responders and would include floor plans and details about what is stored in the warehouse. Illinois saw a record of 142 tornadoes in 2024, according to the National Weather Service. The state has averaged 60 tornadoes each year over the past 10 years. But the number of tornadoes in the state could be increasing as technology to detect them improves, according to data compiled by the New York Times. Most Illinois counties saw an increase in tornadoes in the 20 years from 2002 to 2022 compared to the previous 20 years. Most tornadoes are not as powerful as the Edwardsville tornado, Mark Levitin from the National Windstorm Impact Reduction Project told the task force, but warehouses are more vulnerable because they're tall and supported by heavy walls that rely on the roof for stability. Levitin told the task force it is better to design buildings to withstand the more common modest tornadoes, and buildings should be constructed either with a shelter inside or with a more wind-resistant exterior structure. Returning to the front page of the January 6th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, January 6th attack. 4 years on, reminders fade inside U.S. Capitol. Lawmakers largely silent about riot ahead of Trump inauguration. By Mary Claire Jolinick, Associated Press. Washington. Inside the Capitol, reminders of the violence are increasingly hard to find. Scars on the walls were repaired. Windows and doors broken by the rioters were replaced. There is no plaque, display, or remembrance of any kind. Lawmakers rarely mention the attack, and many Republicans try to downplay it, echoing President-elect Donald Trump's claims that the carnage of that day is overblown and the rioters are the victims. In some ways, it's like the insurrection of January 6th, 2021, that shook the foundations of American democracy, never happened. It's been erased, said Senator Peter Welch, Democrat, Vermont. Winners write history, and Trump won. And his version is that it was a peaceful gathering, obviously completely untrue. If Trump pardons the rioters, as he said he will do, after taking office January 20th, that would be putting an exclamation point on his version of what happened, Welch said. Some of the 1,250 defendants convicted of crimes after January 6th called for the deaths of then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Vice President Mike Pence as the mob violently overran police and breached the building. Some carried weapons, zip-tied ties, chemical irritants, Confederate flags as they ransacked the Capitol and hunted for lawmakers. They sought to stop the certification of Democrat Joe Biden's win over Trump, echoing the Republican incumbent's false claims that his election was stolen. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, one of seven Senate Republicans who voted to convict Trump on impeachment charges after January 6th, said, "It was a very, very dark time. Some lawmakers," she said, "really want to put this all behind us." Former Republican Senator Mike Braun, a frequent Trump ally who left Congress this year and was elected Indiana's governor, said many in the party think the Justice Department was weaponized disproportionately against some rioters. He said many lawmakers who were in the Capitol on January 6th want as much distance as possible between then and now. "I think all of us remember it," Braun said, but he added, "if you start to put plaques up, it looks like it even further emphasizes the divide on the issue. And maybe the biggest remedy is just to keep moving forward." Congress passed a law in March 2022 to require an honorific plaque listing the names of all the police officers and agencies who responded to the violence that occurred at the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021. The architect of the Capitol was ordered to obtain the plaque within a year and permanently place it on the Capitol's western front, where the worst of the fighting took place. Nearly 3 years later, there is no plaque. It's unclear why. A spokeswoman for the architect of the Capitol referred questions to the House Sergeant-at-Arms, who did not respond to requests for information. Democratic Senate leader Chuck Schumer of New York and then-Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky signed off on the plaque, according to Senate leadership, who spoke on condition of anonymity. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York was also supportive. A spokesman for House Speaker Mike Johnson did not respond to requests for comment. Representative Zoe Lofgren, Democrat, California, who led the House Administration Committee when the law was enacted, wrote Johnson in May to ask why the plaque hadn't been installed. She never heard back. New York Representative Joe Morrell, now the top Democrat on the House Administration Committee, said refusing to display the plaque is part of an effort to deny January 6 ever happened and the harm that it caused to the U.S. Capitol Police Force. Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges, who fought rioters and was captured on video screaming as they crushed him in a doorway, said it's incredibly offensive that the plaque has not been installed. "It's an incredibly simple thing, but it can mean a lot to so many who fought that day to defend democracy, defend Congress, the vice president, and staffers," he said. He said January 6th has become a political issue. "It shouldn't be," he said. Hodges said he expects to be working among the thousands of police officers protecting the president and city on Inauguration Day. Former Capitol Police Sergeant Okino Gonnell, who retired because of his injuries from fighting rioters, said, "He lost my career, my health, and even friends and relatives in the aftermath of the attack." He and Hodges were among the few in law enforcement to speak out publicly about their experience. "Looking back, it's like it was all for nothing," Gonnell said. "It's a betrayal." He said he wishes the plaque was up on the West Front so Trump could see it before he steps on to the inauguration stage. He could read the names of the officers right before he walks out, Gunnell said, so he would know that his actions had consequences. In the days before the siege of the Capitol, Republican condemnation was near universal. But within weeks after then-House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy of California said Trump bears responsibility for the attack, McCarthy traveled to Florida to meet with Trump. That kicked off Trump's return to power. When Trump returned to Capitol Hill last year during his campaign, Republican lawmakers gave him standing ovations. After their attitudes toward the January 6th attack shifted, Republican lawmakers condemned the work of the Democratic-led committees that investigated the riot and fiercely contested its findings. Some Republicans echoed Trump's words that the imprisoned rioters are hostages who may be worthy of pardons. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, Democrat, Nevada, said even without a plaque, there are legacies of the attack, such as increased security at this year's certification and Biden's invitation to Trump to come to the Oval Office after the election, a return of the peaceful transition of power. Turning to page 4, the Life section, TV Q&A by Rich Heldenfels. Question. In the past few years, I have noticed that some TV series are not being sold on DVD. Some series have the first and second season sold, but no others. Others are not sold at all. What is the reason for this? Answer. With a few exceptions, sales of TV shows and movies on Blu-ray and DVD have been declining for years as consumers embrace digital downloads and streaming services. This diminished interest has prompted retailers such as Best Buy to stop stocking discs, so there is less reason for its distributors to make shows available in these forms, especially when a digital or streaming version is far more profitable. Only there are consumers who still buy discs, and as has been pointed out by filmmakers, productions may come and go on streaming services or not get there at all. Rights issues, such as music, may also work against something getting to any home viewing form. At the same time, as the FTC has pointed out, you don't necessarily own a digital download of a production. Instead, you have bought a license to access the content, and the seller may be able to change that at any time. I've heard that all this has led to young people embracing so-called physical media, including not only DVDs, but CDs and vinyl, because they will always own it. But there's still not enough of that to guarantee productions will get to discs. Turning to page 5, national news, U.S. Postal Service faces theft threat from within. Small percentage of workers are found to steal, by Dave Lieber, the Dallas Morning News. One of the bigger threats to the U.S. Postal Service is not the ever-growing cost of stamps, long lines at the post office, or even delayed mail. The biggest threats to USPS may be the mail handlers themselves. Auditors found that a tiny percentage of them steal, and they steal a lot, according to a federal investigation of a dozen mail sorting facilities across the U.S. In mid-December, federal prosecutors charged two postal workers with stealing more than $1 million in business checks. The two worked at postal facilities in Virginia and North Carolina. However, that's not the whole mail bag on the matter. In a stunning finding by the USPS Office of Inspector General, Inspector General Tammy L. Hull writes that criminal organizations are targeting, recruiting, and colluding with postal employees to move narcotics through the postal network and to steal checks, both personal and government-issued checks, credit cards, and other valuables from the mail. Frank Albergo, president of the Postal Police Officers Association, told Norfolk, Virginia, TV news station WTKR that postal services aren't getting a job because they want to deliver the mail or they want to sort mail. They're getting a job to steal mail. He added, criminal organizations are recruiting postal workers to infiltrate the Postal Service. That should be shocking to everyone. No Texas facilities were targeted in the year-long audit of the dozen plants. However, a Houston plant is undergoing a similar probe, with the results to be announced in the spring, said Tara Linney, spokesperson for the USPS Inspector General. USPS spokesperson David Walton told the Watchdog, "We have no additional comment, aside from management response, to the investigation." The auditors suggested a series of improvements that included more training of employees, stronger national policy banning personal items from inside the facilities, and updating 18,619 cameras in plants throughout the United States. Many of them no longer work, according to auditors. How do they steal? It's not that hard when you bring bags, backpacks, coats, and jackets into the plant floor. Mail can be transferred from a box to a jacket. The risk of getting caught is small. A Milwaukee mail clerk under surveillance looked in trays for greeting cards that contained gift cards. The clerk moved them to another tray during their shift and then placed all the mail in a backpack. The clerk was fired, prosecuted, and found guilty, the report said. The clerk was given 2 years probation and ordered to pay $1,600. In St. Louis, a mail handler stole 55 of 150 packages out of a truck. The mail handlers helped each other as lookouts while stolen items were stashed in their jackets and backpacks. 7 workers either resigned or were fired. 1 was sentenced to 3 months in a federal prison. If you suspect your mail was stolen, contact the postal inspector at 877-876-2455. Their website is www.uspsoig.gov/. You can file a complaint at your local post office. Sign up for Informed Delivery. The free service sends you an email each morning showing photographs of each piece of mail to be delivered that day. It's always safer to mail your items inside the post office instead of dropping it in the blue collection boxes. If you haven't already, consider paying your bills through online banking rather than mailed checks. From page 4, Entertainment Briefs, Jeremy Renner grateful on accident anniversary. Jeremy Renner has expressed his gratitude for the army of people who helped him to recover from his 2023 snowplow accident. The 53-year-old actor has taken to social media to mark the 2-year anniversary of his accident in Reno, Nevada, when he was struck by a snowplow and left in a critical condition. Alongside a throwback photo of the doctors and nurses who helped him with his recovery, Renner wrote on Instagram, "Happy New Year blessings to you all, ringing in my second re-birthday today. I send out my love, respect, and gratitude for the army of people that it took to put me back together again. Thank you to each and every nurse, doctor, first responder. I literally owe you my life. All my heart goes out to my brave, beautiful nephew and the angels, my neighbors, who jumped to my aid and endured the chaos for 45 long minutes on the icy asphalt New Year's morning." Renner admitted the incident has changed his entire outlook on life. The Hollywood star also observed that he needed some divine intervention and a bit of luck in order to survive. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, January 6th, 2025. Please stay tuned.